promise.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly and makes you shine.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day. And William, how in the hell are you doing today?
I just want that music to die. Is it too much to kill that music? I'm sure the song is fantastic. It's like Adele. We had it on for like 300 shows. I just want that music to die. Brian, I'm doing fantastic. This week's a big week. I was actually planning on traveling this week and did not schedule to go to Erie, which is in San Diego, or Sherm Talent, which is in Las Vegas. So early in the year, when I planned this particular week, I said no to both conferences. And now I'm kind of wishing that I was either one or the other or both. But alas, I'm at home. I'm going to get a lot of work done, which is great. I'm doing well. But, for those of you that are listening, please pay attention to, Erie Expo. I think the hashtag is just Erie Expo, and I think Sherm Talent is the hashtag over there. But pay attention. We have got a lot of friends that are attending and speaking at those events, and I'm sure both of them are going to be fantastic.
Well, that's, yes, good folks. Got a lot of good, a lot of friends, a lot of thought leadership running around at those two conferences. So jump in the stream, people, and I want to get to our guests. And Mike Vandervoort, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's great to be back. Always love hanging out with you guys for a little while, a couple times a year. So thanks.
Well, and before we get into your introduction, I just want to tell everybody how the power of social media and your friends and being active, using social tools in the community, how important it is. Because I had this friend named Trish McFarland, who a lot of us respect, love, and adore, and she knew you, Mike, and she thought, hey, these two guys might actually have something in common and do some damage. Introduce us, which was true. That happened. So anyway, back 2010, she made the introduction. We had a call, and then we ended up meeting at the same conference in Madison, Wisconsin, and then have been friends ever since.
It's true.
So that is the power right there, people. So,
and that was actually the only true event, as big as that brand has become. That's the only true event I've ever been to. So I guess it was probably a good thing that I went to that one in Madison because, we've become great friends, and the show and roommates at the on the road sometimes at conferences when we're trying to save money. So it's all good.
Epic stories behind that. So, and actually, Trish, I met her at the first true event in London, so in person. So lots of good things come out of that. So, Mike, if you would, millions of listeners, you haven't been on for a while, introduce yourself, and then we'll jump into kind of what's top of mind for you.
Well, Mike Vandervoort, been an HR blogger and speaker professional for varying numbers of years. I've been in HR since 1986, doing HR generalist work for a long time, and now a labor relations specialist and an HR strategist for large employer in Florida, Public Supermarkets, and also have a blog called The Human Racehorses, thehumanracehorses.com, which has been around, I guess, since about 2007. And I write very intermittently now, but I have well over 1,000 posts that I've generated over that five-year span. And, do a little social media on the side, Mike Vandervoort on Twitter. So, and speak and write and share my opinions and thoughts about our HR profession from time to time and have built a great network and a lot of friends as a result of doing that. And it really was, it's really been an interesting 5-year span, I think, since social media came onto the path of my life and really into the HR profession in a big way.
Well, Mike, what's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Oh, man. Well, William, as we talked before the show, a little bit of family health issues, which unfortunately caused me to cancel out of an event. And I just want to give that event a shout out because you guys were there and can testify better than I. But Louisiana Sherm and our friend Robin Schooling, I was supposed to speak down there and I had to drop out because of a last minute developing family situation. And I heard that that was fantastic. And really regret not having had a chance to come down and speak and get together with everyone. Missed the chance to meet Doug Shaw and some folks from across the pond. And so sorry about that, Robin. I hope the shout-out here helps make up for it a little bit. And then the other thing I've been doing, William, is last week I did get out towards the end of the week after things settled down at home, and I was able to attend Illinois Sherm and give a talk there about sort of the developing stuff in labor relations, which was well received. It was the Illinois Sherm Legislative Conference, and our buddy Dave Ryan had invited me up to speak there, and that was pretty well received. It was the first time I had given this particular presentation, and I was going through the sort of pre-development angst that you get when you're trying to roll out a brand new presentation and topic, and so it went. Better than I expected, I guess. So I was happy with that. But I'd written a blog post about it and spent some time over the weekend thinking about the whole process of speaking and how I react to it every time, and posted it the other day. And Dave kind of sent me a private message saying, "Hey, I never saw that. Are you okay?" And I guess I was like, "Wow, I must have been more open and candid about my fear of public speaking than I had thought." So it was kind of an interesting response that I've seen so far. So I was thinking about talking about that for a little bit.
Well, you know, what's funny is if you don't have anxieties around speaking, then something's wrong. You know, like they tell you all the musicians, great entertainers, et cetera, there's always some level of anxieties or butterflies or whatever. How is yours different from kind of like what you perceive as kind of like what you should have versus you know, being completely terrified, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things is, as you go through I guess there's a process to speaking, and, you know, there's the event itself, but there's also the work that, and you guys both know this, Brian, this is your business now, right? The work that speakers do to put their material together and get it ready and then prepare it and give it. The first couple times, it's kind of like test driving a new car. You don't necessarily have all the right points down, and you don't know where the jokes land. And so once you've given the same presentation a few times, which I think most speakers do, you know, not everybody creates a brand new package every time or a new deck every time they go out to speak. It would be a more than full time job just writing PowerPoints and Prezis. So I think that after I become comfortable with a presentation, and I try to work on one where I keep it updated and fresh topically, but generally the theme is I run for about a year with one of those. So at the beginning of the year, I'm like a kind of crazy person, you know, trying to pull everything together and get the messaging down and get the right images in the slides and just all that technical stuff. But the first time I go to give it, I feel like I have 50 pounds of stuff in a 25-pound bag, you know. I don't know what I should say and where it'll work. And so I always kind of feel like my head's going to explode the first time I go up there. And that's how I felt this last week. And, in fact, I told Dave Ryan, because he and I are both interested in hockey, I likened it to a goalie who's getting ready to go out and face NHL slap shots coming at his head about 100 miles an hour, you know. Sometimes your stomach gets upset, and sometimes those guys barf. And I was kind of at that stage. So it was interesting. It's been the first time I've given a completely new topic in a while, and I was pretty nervous when I got up there, although Dave says he didn't see that at all. So it was pretty reactive, you know, pretty emotional and pretty right out there for me, at least inside. But I guess I covered it up with that professional demeanor. How do you guys respond to that? I'm curious how yours are, because I know you do a lot of different things, William.
We should not use me as a test case. ever. Really quickly,
stay away.
As a follow-on to that is, do you speak for you or do you speak for the audience?
That's interesting. I speak on what I think I know that is worth wasting the audience time listening to me on. It's not really a waste, right? I want to share something with them that I think is important for them to know. So I guess, and it's not because I know it, I think it's because it's important to the profession. So I guess I speak for me in order to be able to share information that I think I've learned that other people might want to hear about. So, I guess I speak for the audience at the end of the day. I work really hard. I try to put a lot of emotion in it, although sometimes I think when people watch me speak, I think I come across as low-key. But inside, I really work hard to bring passion to topics that for a lot of people are not that exciting and aren't even that mainstream in HR.
Take us through your prep. Again, no right answers. Clearly, no right answers. So we're not into the judgment business here. But what I want to do is kind of break things down for the audience in terms of those that might want to get out on tour and speak in front of an audience. So take us through kind of what it takes for you to kind of get ready and your prep, and do you practice, etc.
The answer is it depends. If it's a small group on a topic that I've presented a lot on, then I'm more likely to be a little more casual. Not so much in the prep, but I sort of have an accumulated body of knowledge I can draw on, so I don't need to get up there and practice. That's having done it, because you've already got the hours of practice in. But on this new one, I didn't dry run it because I had so much going on with the personal family stuff that I was talking about that I didn't get a chance to dry run it. And I was kind of counting on a chance to run it twice in the same week to, you know, be able to get me on top of this one. And when I had to cancel out of the first gig, wound up going up there and feeling bad about that in my own head. And then being, you know, having not dry run it ever for this legislative group. So I was pretty wound up. I ran through it a lot in the morning, reading the slides and reading my speaker's notes. But I to go all the way back, I pick a topic that I think is timely because I like to do stuff that's kind of cutting edge, hopefully, as far as at least topical information sharing. Talking about human resources or labor relations, you've got to give people something that they're going to want to hear about, because otherwise it's just going to be case law reviews, and I hate those things. And we had lawyers at the same conference that did a great job on those anyway. So I try to talk about what's going on in the field. I try to bring in engaging examples. I use a lot of imagery in my presentations because I think it helps convey the picture, the actual images of what's happening when people are engaged in strife and conflict through labor relations. So I do a lot of research. I look for a lot of relevant examples. Like in the Illinois, I had a couple of examples straight out of the state of Illinois that I could point to, so that it brings that, you know, that this is happening right here in your city of Chicago or in your backyard in your state. And I really, the first time I get up there, I just really kind of have it all framed out in my head. I don't use speaker's notes. I dry run it a number of times in my head, and then I try to get out there and bring it out. And one of the things that I get frustrated about, and I wrote about this in the blog, was that, you know, you don't have those points, and so you're still trying to figure out the sequencing. And it just kind of, every once in a while you hiccup. Or in this case, I flipped myself because I was using a clicker I didn't have time to practice with in a room I hadn't really presented in before, and I clicked myself right out of the damn presentation. You know, you just got to pick it up and roll with it, right? But it's those little things that can really blow somebody up if they haven't done it before, and I guess that's the advantage of having given these things for over the last few years.
How do you know if the audience is getting it, and or what's your sense of feedback? Like, how do you care about feedback, et cetera?
I do. I mean, I care about feedback. I look for engagement in the room. you know, I try to if people aren't actively raising their hands or participating in the discussion, which fortunately for this one last week they were, then you know you try to read faces and you try to see the energy of the room, or are people taking notes, or are they looking at their phones and counting time until the next break so they can go get a Coke? And you know, sometimes it's hard to read, but you know, I look for that. And the other thing is, of course, if you throw a joke out there, because every presentation should have one or two cheesy jokes, and if nobody laughs, then I usually feel like I'm falling down. But I have a couple tried and true ones that I use, and it generally brings the room around a little bit anyway. So yeah, I don't know.
It's funny with today, you know, you can actually have a whole entire room and not see their faces, especially if it's a little bit more hardwired for social media.
Right.
Everyone can be staring at their laptop, their pad, their phone, et cetera. And it's not that they're disengaged. In fact, you can go back after and read the Twitter stream or whatever, Storify, and all of a sudden you see that they're really engaged by what you were saying. So how do you contend with that these days?
Yeah, personally, like I said, I think you look for those people that are asking questions. You look for those that aren't, because there's always a mix, right? There's those people that are heavy social, and then there are those people who are nose down into their notebook scribbling as fast as they can. And I always assume they're not writing love letters, but that they're taking down every word I say, you know. So that I use that to power myself back up. But I think you just gotta. You got to understand that if they're, you know, in your own head, right, you've got to say if they're here, unless they were forced to be here by some group of people who kidnapped them, that they came in wanting to hear about the topic that you offered up, and you got to go for it, you know, bring the energy in, and if the topic is interesting and you bring the energy, I think that people will respond, most of them. I know they provided the feedback, you know, please fill out your review form at the end of the conference kind of thing, which I'm bad about doing. But I got, you know, I was like, I don't know. When I told Dave Ryan, I was like, I don't know. I wasn't very happy with the way that one came off. And he's like, oh, I thought you killed it. And I was like, oh, we'll see. And they sent me the feedback forms the next day, and it was like 28 out of 29 people rated me very high, and one rated me average, you know. So that was pretty nice affirmation after the fact. But I wasn't certain at when I was done right after the thing ended. I just couldn't tell this time.
Nice. Hey, everybody, do a quick reset. Brian William Nisha on with Michael Vandervoort, one of the best folks in the space. Love having you on. So feedback is such an interesting thing. I mean, I'm glad we kind of went down this path, because, you know, that's one of the things that now that with Steve Oak and being, you know, really kind of immersing into the speaker side of things, different people, we have conversations with all of our speakers, kind of exactly kind of what they feel about feedback, how they feel, when they want it. And it's interesting on how that gets, you know, what you do with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause everybody, it's kind of like looking at art. You have 10 people, 10 people have different, you know, have a different take on it. 10 people are the critics on, you know, how that goes. So what's the best feedback, and what's probably one of the most, like, damning feedback you've ever gotten?
Oh, man, you're going to ask me. I don't. in this last session, I thought it was rather amusing. The topic was social media and labor relations, but I went with more labor relations and less social media than I've done in the past, because I think that the social media part is becoming more mundane. More people are used to it. So I one of the comments that I got, similar three times out of the 29 or so people who gave feedback this last time, was, I wish there would have been more on social media. In the past, it was always, he concentrated too much on social media and not enough on labor relations. So it's, to your point, Brian, it's kind of like, not only is it the type of feedback people want, but it's also what is the content that people are coming in and hoping to consume in the presentation, right? So the worst that I ever got was I had a slide up, and I showed a picture of a young union organizer, and when I say young, I'm talking like 20 something, with a faux hawk and a pierced labrum, you know, piercing in his lip, and big gauge earrings, and I'm on the plus side of 50, and I made some comment about this is the face of the future of union organizing and blah blah blah. And this woman wrote back and said, "What's so unusual about that guy? You know, he's from my generation," and it sort of made me feel very awkward to be in the room. And I was like, "Hmm." So I guess the point I took away from that was I got to stop being so generational centric to my own perception of the world and think about the whole audience that I'm speaking to. So that one hit me harder probably than any other because I felt like I alienated somebody who was paying attention to what I was saying.
The irony is I try to alienate people. So,
I know, you know, you go out of your way, and it's so hard, though, because they all love you anyway. I don't get it, man.
It is great. Let's be honest. We would be remiss if we didn't ask you, Mike, about the intersection points of labor relations and social media. So if you don't mind, bring the audience into, hey, you know what, 2012, 2013, here's some of the stuff that we're seeing.
I think, you know, when I started talking about this topic a couple years ago, probably 3 years ago, was the first time I ever really gave an active presentation on it. And what I said then is that both sides, you know, one message was HR people need to get up to speed, which a lot of us were doing. That whole voice of, you know, you're not engaged enough as a profession. Get out there and get into social media. And because I do work in labor relations. My sort of related topic on that narrow focus was labor unions and labor organizations are starting to use social media to get their message out there, and they're not great at it yet, but they're starting to use it, and we need to be aware of that and pay attention to it. And I think really that has morphed from say 2009, William, to now, to where certainly it's not ubiquitous across the board in every organization and every company, but for both sides of that fence, that the HR management side and the labor organizations on the so-called other side of the fence, they're both using it now. They both started to figure out ways, and there's been all kinds of innovation, and it's really just part of the communication process, although we keep seeing iterations of new ideas and strategies. So the need to stay current isn't any less urgent, but it's the capabilities of both sides have escalated, and I think the awareness and also the understanding that social media by itself isn't gonna transform an organization or a culture or a union, but it's gonna become a pretty formidable tool in whatever institution puts it to work if you use it the right way. And that's what I'm seeing today. And so that's why I actually on this year for this presentation that I put together, I sort of slid back the other way towards talking more about general labor relations and a little less about social media, because it's just part of the whole equation now. It's not like the brand new big thing. It's part of it, but there's more stuff going on, like the National Labor Relations Board being out of business essentially because of political gridlock in Washington, D.C., and finding the presidential recess appointments unconstitutional. I mean, those have nothing to do with social media, and those are things that are impacting my side of the profession much more now than social is at this moment. So,
what are you seeing in mobile and labor relations, or apps and labor relations these days?
Yeah,
there
are apps. There are kind of like. There's a guy whose name is Peter List, and he's a management side union consultant or labor relations consultant, and he runs a blog called Labor Union Report, and he has an app out, and he's one of these guys who basically blogs headlines, so the app is kind of like a catch all the headlines on labor relations if you want to just read this stuff. A lot of union locals are starting to create iPad apps and iPhone apps and Android apps for their membership, which they use to basically pushing out their websites into a mobile format and calling it an app. There are some informational type where you can like go on if you want to search around a particular topic and a brand. There are some websites that now allow you to kind of search, like it's kind of like a reverse Yelp. You can look up a restaurant and see how they're doing on their sustainability or their their participation in labor things. And so there's quite a, you know, it's, if the technology exists, people are starting to try to figure out how to put it to work. But so mobile, that seems to be the direction it's going. It's pushing the information, and there's also a ton of, citizen journalism, right? People are using their mobile phones to record events on site, live stream, Ustream, all that kind of stuff. So everything's merging into a social event, just like they do at any other crazy news story, when people pull out their phones and start tweeting and Facebooking and YouTubing everything from the moment. So a lot of that kind of stuff is what I'm seeing in mobile right now.
Hey, Mike, this is Brian. So with the kind of to jump back to the political appointments and kind of the how that new process is going to work, trying to get them back to, you know, the NLRB to 5 again.
Right.
What should everybody be paying attention to and looking around that subject?
Well, there's two big things. One is there's a case called Noel Canning, N-O-E-L, like Christmas Noel, Noel Canning, and that's just the name of a company. I guess somewhere out west, I think in California, and they're like a Coca-Cola bottler or something, and they filed an appeal over some issue between them and their labor union, and it wound up going into district court in D.C. And so the Noel Canning decision essentially found, the district court there essentially ruled that the appointments that President Obama made back at the end of 2011, which were recess appointments to the board, of which there are only three members, two out of those three board members were essentially appointed in an improper manner. And the board can't operate unless they have a quorum. So normally the board has 5, as you said, Brian, but right now they're operating with 3. So 3 is the quorum. And if 2 people are improperly appointed, unconstitutionally appointed, then the whole board is out of business, basically. And so it calls into question, that one case calls into question all the decisions and all the case law and all the adjudicated matters that have gone before them since, what, November, December 2011. And the only way they can get it fixed is one of two ways. Either President Obama needs to appoint other members in a non-recessed manner, and they need to be confirmed by the Senate so that they can get to the quorum of 3, or that case needs to be overturned by a higher court. And what the board is doing is they said they're going to bypass an appeal to the district court, or to the circuit court rather, and they're going to go straight to the Supreme Court to see if they can get the Supreme Court to hear something. So that's pending, and God only knows when that'll happen. A lot of people who follow that stuff closely say it might not happen until the end of this year. So that's the quickest route they can get, is to have the court decision set aside, but that's unlikely to happen anytime soon. President Obama last week surprise people by announcing 3 new nominations. He resubmitted two nominees, the names of his recess appointment. He resubmitted those 2 people, and he also resubmitted Mark Pierce, who's the chairman of the board, whose term expires, I think, in August, resubmitted him for another term, and then he submitted the names of 2 Republicans, which essentially he wound up resubmitting to the Senate confirmation process 5 names for the board. And if the Senate was to go in and confirm 3 of those 5, it would put the board back in business. But because of the gridlock, it doesn't appear as if that's going to happen anytime soon. So right now, our best hope is that Supreme Court appeal. And then in the meantime, everything's just kind of sitting on the side. The other thing that happened is last week, and this is also meaningless in some ways, the House passed by 219-209 or something, passed a thing called the Greater Uncertainty in Labor Relations Act, which essentially says that the board can't do anything until they get themselves confirmed properly, but the Senate won't take it up, so that law is only not going to pass either. So there's all kinds of people posturing and nobody really getting much done.
Perfect. Well, thank you. I mean, I know there's some things going on with that. So, Mike, we are basically out of time.
Yep.
Where can folks connect up with you? And then we're out of here for today.
Okay, blog, thehumanracehorses.com, Twitter, Mike Vandervoort. Just search my name, Michael Vandervoort, on Google. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, always good to hear your voice. And, folks, we are out of here with a little bit of The Cure.